You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is the Analyzing Anfield podcast on the Blood Red Channel, bringing you the best tactical and statistical analysis of Liverpool FC.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Analyzing Anfield, your tactics and analytics podcast, courtesy of the Blood Red Channel. I am Josh Williams and I'm joined after a week off by Mo Stewart. Mo, how are you feeling, mate?
Within myself, I'm okay physically. I've had some troubles, but hey, it's a day when Liverpool signed a footballer, so I'm doing very well.
Yeah, well, that news broke about an hour before we got on this podcast to start recording. So we will definitely speak about that. We did have a week away last week, just one of them weeks where I had one or two days off and it didn't really work and stuff, but it was the end of the season anyway, so I think our listeners will maybe allow us one week off, hopefully. But we feel like I've missed a fair bit. Like, Liverpool have been linked with a few players since we've been away. We haven't talked about them, so this is very much a transfers episode, really. We were going to do the team of the season, weren't we? But feels like last season was about 4 months away now.
Yeah, exactly. It's over.
Just forget about that season, mate. But yeah, I mean, we'll start with the obvious news. Alexis McAllister is a new Liverpool player, first signing of the summer. Initial thoughts?
All positive. I like it in a multitude of reasons and ways. I like the way that we seem to have done it so soon, with very little fuss and very little kind of back and forth or even any kind of disagreement. Seems like something that we've had in place for a while. Obviously, we're probably going to talk about the fee as well and how it's a lot less than we were expecting and how that gives us a little bit more leeway in other positions. But just concentrating on what he is as a footballer and what he brings to this team. I think he's one of those guys who makes other players play better. He's very appreciative and intelligent of what every situation needs and how he can adapt his skills to it. And I think that's something that we've lacked this season. There's been times when we've spoken in shows about complementary football and how we seem to be kind of playing it cross purposes. Now, some of that was due to tactical confusion, trying to overlap too many different styles at once. But sometimes you just need someone to be able to read the game that's in front of them and play it accordingly. And he very much feels like one of those guys.
Yeah, I think it's genuinely really, really close to being what is a perfect transfer for me. I can't see a single downside attached to it. I have zero concerns that he is a potential failure or a worry or anything like that. I think he's as close to a guaranteed hit as it gets. obviously, the £35 million price tag comes into that. I think he more than justifies that risk. Yeah. Can play all different roles in the midfield. Really solid availability. 24 years old, which is perfect. Speaks the language brilliantly, despite being foreign and initially not being able to speak the language when he first got to Brighton. He's just kind of made that leap in terms of establishing himself as one of the best players in the league and winning the World Cup and establishing himself as a regular for Argentina, things like that. So, and in terms of, like, one of the main things I like about it is, I'm sure we'll touch on this later in the show when we touch on the likes of Thuram and the likes of Kone. But one thing I really like about McAllister is in terms of how Liverpool might set up next season with McAllister, it really feels like it doesn't matter. It feels like no matter how Liverpool and how Klopp chooses to shape his midfield in terms of a formation on the pitch or whatever, McAllister is just not going to be a problem, man. He's almost not going to be a victim of any tactical system, really. He can play as a double six. If Liverpool play in a 4-3-3, he can play as the left side on the three, in my opinion. If Liverpool play this 3-2-5 that we've been using since April, he can play as in the 10 roles.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's a perfect tactical fit, as well as just being a really sensible recruitment signing. But the tactical fit, I think, is specifically ideal because, as I said, he's not going to be a problem in any way.
No, and he gives us, again, a lot of the things that we've been missing. If you think about his ability to win duels, his ability to win the ball higher up the field, I mean, we talk about him being able to play as a double six and have defensive qualities. He does a lot of his defensive qualities quite high up. So in terms of tackles in the final third, winning the ball back in the final third, he's one of the best up there. And that is something that we've lacked. And I think that's another part of the key why our midfield's been so clunky and why counterattacks have been such a problem. Because the quickest way to stop someone counterattacking on you is to win the ball back. And we used to be very good at that. And that's something that it kind of came out of our game partly through the way we were playing. But I think it's also come out of our game partly due to the lack of our intensity. So it pleases me to see we've got someone who's good at that back in the team. But I agree with you in terms of he feels like one of those players who will always play. And it won't be like we're making the game plan around him. It's whatever game plan we've got, there's a spot for him wherever it goes. And he reminds me, and I don't want to say this to put pressure on him, but just in terms of the nature of how he goes about his play and the positions and the roles he fills, it's almost like part Genie, part Gundogan. They can fulfill the roles that Genie filled for us and Gundogan fills for City. Not only just being the facilitator in the link, but knowing the time to be able to come in and provide a goal threat from the edge of the box and knowing the time to sit back and protect your back four and build out from the back from that way. He's just, the idea of getting him into pre-season from the jump and having everyone to be able to work with him. So when we start the season, everyone's up to speed with him. He's up to speed with everyone. It's a very exciting prospect.
Yeah, I like to think on this podcast we moved quite early on McAllister. I think around the time of the World Cup, we obviously needed to create Liverpool content despite Liverpool not playing for a month. So I think one of the shows that I remember doing was like a midfield show, as in who can Liverpool target and stuff. And we might have even done like a wild cards midfielders show as well. And I can't remember which show I used to pick him, but I definitely remember naming him. And one of the reasons I included his name was because of how surprised I was by his defensive numbers at the time. At the time of the World Cup, he ranked second in the Premier League for recoveries behind only Declan Rice.
Yeah.
Now, when you think for a bit of perspective on that, a recovery is, say you drop the ball out the sky and it lands somewhere on the pitch. If you go and get that ball, that's a recovery. And he was second for that in the Premier League when it comes to the World Cup. And in terms of tackles and interceptions, I'm pretty sure he was either top three or top five in the league. And I remember seeing that and thinking, do you know what? I didn't know McAllister was one of those players. I thought he was kind of like a technician, like a creator.
Yeah.
Caicedo, I thought, was that player for Brighton, the ball winner. And I thought McAllister was kind of a bit of a conductor, a bit of a controller, if you like, who could also morph into this arriving late penalty box, Gundogan type figure. But when I seen his defensive numbers, I was really encouraged. Since then, his defensive numbers have dropped off a bit, but his position has changed a little bit as well. He started to be used as a number 10. Obviously, he's naturally going to recover the ball less and things like that and intercept the ball a bit less when he's playing as a number 10, a bit higher up the pitch. But I've read Klopp's comments on him, and one of the things Klopp said in his blurb about him was that he is an all-rounder. And that's probably the best way to describe him. He looks like a 10. He looks like a really luxury passenger almost, because he's creative, technical, quite slight. But make no mistake, he can do everything, this lad.
Yeah, and I think there will be a lot of talk about his lack of physicality, particularly his lack of speed. But I think those ball recovery numbers really show you the fact that how he's able to counteract that. Because if you think about the example you gave of a ball recovery, of a second ball, a ball coming out of anywhere, people who are able to recover them time and time again, yes, it requires the fitness to be in the right position. It requires the awareness and the game intelligence to know and to predict where balls are going to fall time and time again. And that's what he has in abundance. And I think that's what's going to be able to really open up our game tactically, because he not only has that intelligence, but he has the ability to recognize and then utilize it in a split second. And once all the rest, as I say, once the rest of our guys get in his wavelength, it's going to be scary.
Yeah, I mean, assessing those numbers, because obviously we always try to touch on the numbers attached to a player's game, it's quite tricky with McAllister. And the reason for that is because he has spent half the season as a 6 next to Casado and half the season as a 10 playing in the final third where Alana was playing before he got injured. So if you look at McAllister's numbers, how you interpret what he is essentially the tricky part. For example, he ranks in the top 1% of midfielders. This is midfielders for shots, with about 2.5 per 90, which is a lot for a centre mid. But then, if those numbers are applied to attacking mids, he's in the top 27%, which is nothing special. So it's difficult to provide like a data background on McAllister like we do usually with Liverpool signs, and that's simply because he's so versatile, really.
But I mean, that's a good thing though, right? That's the thing, isn't it? It's and also I think one of the things that's probably going to come into it over the course of this show and over the course of how we assess all new players coming in is that the stats kind of guide us into what they have done so far, but that doesn't necessarily give us the lead as to what Klopp's idea is before the player, because there are plenty of times when Klopp's kind of brought something out, someone that we didn't necessarily see coming, and then suddenly that's become their most useful characteristic. So it's all exciting to know how we're going to put the pieces together, but as more pieces come in, it's almost like the more of the picture you begin to see.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question for me, actually, just in terms of what Klopp's plan is, because I would get the impression, I would guess that he's looking at him almost like another Wijnaldum, in the sense that rather than thinking this is the plan for this player, he's looking at McAllister and just thinking like he's a blank slate. He can become whatever I need him to be. I think he's probably a left-sided 8 for Liverpool, whether that's in the 4-3-3 or in this new 3-2-5. I think he's the left-sided 8. The only concern I have with that, the one concern I have attached to that, is Curtis Jones has been brilliant there lately. And it would mean first game of the season if they're both fit. How do you play both? It would be my concern, because I think they both really favour that left side. Probably Jones more so. Maybe McAllister could play the right.
Analysing Anfield on the Blood Red Channel.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think, again, if you're playing 4-3-3... then, yeah, I think McAllister can play on the right. It's obviously not his natural position. But if you think about the comparative, in a world where there are no more signings, which obviously would be quite worrying, McAllister would probably still be the best choice of everyone else to play on the right side. So I think from that perspective, I still think Curtis will get a lot of games. I think there's a world where the two of them play together, maybe when we're playing the three box three formation. I think that's probably a lot more likely. But I also think it's one of those situations where Klopp is very much saying to himself, I want to have at least two guys who can do every job. So, for example, with someone like Kevin Turan, if you're playing a 4-3-3, you'd probably say he would want to be on the left side of that as well. But again, once you get him into the building, once you start to adapt some of his qualities, it might be that he is more suited to playing somewhere else in certain situations or certain scenarios. So there's going to be a little bit of two people competing, but then there's going to be a little bit of sometimes they're on the same side, if you see what I mean. So, but again, it all depends upon who we get and whether or not there are players who are maybe a 1A and a 1B, or if we get one, then we need a C rather than the B, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, it feels like we are moving lots of different pieces at the minute. It feels like we're spinning plates. I think it's difficult to determine exactly what Liverpool are going to do, because I don't think Liverpool themselves overly know what they're going to do yet. I think they probably know what they want to do, but a lot of it just depends on who they can get, who is willing to join, which clubs are willing to sell. Like, for example, Ryan Gravenberg, I think we would get him in if we could. But I don't even know if Bayern know what they want to do yet with that. And I think, obviously, the target and Declan Rice, I assume if they can get Declan Rice, they would probably sell Gravenberg. So that it is spinning a lot of plates. But that's why just getting McAllister done and dusted so early for such a good price, when he is not the kind of player who is reliant on, right, you need to play like this for me to do well. He can just thrive whatever the plan ends up being, if you know what I mean. That's the beauty of him. But unless you've got anything to add on McAllister, who's probably going to be a guaranteed hit as far as I'm concerned, I think he'd be absolutely fine.
The one thing I want to add about him is that I am not on board with letting AI come up with chance. Specifically, I mean, okay, I'll say this because I said this in my group chat and everyone else said that I'm the weirdo, right? Am I the only one who's annoyed that they made up a song to Ecuador when he's from Argentina?
That's a great point, to be fair, yeah. I have heard the song, though. It's impressive that a robot has come up with that.
But is it, though? I mean, this is it, like, again, I feel like chance is something Liverpool fans in particular have always been priding ourselves on being good at, being original. And if AI can come up with something that sounds a bit like us, maybe we're not as original as we think we are.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see who AI would recommend we sign next, to be honest. And what AI thinks of Manu Koenig, for example. We'll move on to him next. So nothing particularly concrete in the media yet, really, but lots of stuff coming from Germany to suggest that Liverpool are speaking to his representatives or whatever you want to call it. Lots of hype around this lad as well on Twitter. A lot of fans seem to want him. I'm not sure how many of them have actually watched him play, but a lot of them seem to want him. What are your thoughts, Mo?
To be honest, I have watched him play a lot, and I would like him to come and sign. It's interesting because, unlike what we were saying with McAllister, there are definitely caveats, there are definitely things you can point out and say, maybe not, maybe not. But I think the thing I like about him the most, aside from his general energy, is that he is extremely coachable. He's taken on extra parts of his game, and he's been able to adapt over time. And I think that you look at the raw materials he has, and you look at the potential job that we need to do. If he can bring those raw materials from day one, then he already improves the team. If he can then add all of the other parts, the higher passing percentage in particular, I think the turnovers, those are the two things I think at present holding him back in terms of looking like an elite footballer. I think if he can get those two things out of his game, then he can suddenly advance things forward. I think, yeah, I understand that there are other players in playing that position who we may have targeted previously. We spoke previously about Ugarte and how he would be more natural defensive style midfielder. And that's the other thing. Kone can play as a box-to-box, and he has played that a lot. I think if he were in this Liverpool team, looking at the makeup of everyone else we're looking at, I think he would probably be looking to be doing more of the defensive side job. So it's an interesting one. Like I say, I think there'll be a lot more debate than there would be for any of the others. But I've watched this kid enough. I've watched him for two seasons now at Gladbach. And I can see why Klopp watches him and thinks, I can get this kid into a star.
Yeah, it is a really interesting link. I have specific thoughts on this one. So I think as a player, I have no issues with him. I think he's a good player. I think he's got a high ceiling. I think he's suited to Liverpool in general and what we tend to want from midfielders and things like that. But I would have been a lot keener on getting him in about 3 months ago. One thing I've reinforced all season is Liverpool need to get midfielders who lean towards the defensive side of the game, because Liverpool are getting cut open all the time. And people who listen to the show every week will have heard me ramble on about that every week, probably. Kone is perfect for that, because he can play very press resistant, good on the dribble, but he puts a foot in as well, and he can cover ground, and he's got a harrying play, his natural pressure and all that stuff. But since Liverpool have moved away from the 4-3-3 with the ball and moved towards a 3-2-5, I would just be curious, where is he playing? Where is he going to play? Because the
he's two eights... next to Trent. You're playing next to Trent. And you say to him that you can... When Trent's in space, you find him with the ball. That's always your first pass. From there, if there is space for you to draw into, then you have an amount you can go into. The problem with it, or the thing that he's going to need to develop, is the discipline to know when he can bring the ball into advanced areas and when he has to stay in his position to protect against the counterattack. Because I think we're going to need lots of carriers. I think one thing that I've noticed about all three of the guys we're going to talk about in this show in particular, and a lot of the guys who we've been linked with in midfield, they're all good at carrying the ball, progressing the ball through dribble, if not necessarily through passing. And I think when we're playing against teams that are in a low block, that is the key to drawing them out, to making them do something different. So even if you're asking him to do that from a deeper position, I think having that instinct will help him in that position. But again, I feel like this could be one of the things where it's like, he would need to sharpen up, as I mentioned, on the turnovers in particular. But I think he can play that role. I do.
See, the thing with that, though, is that for me, you can rule out the two eights. I don't think he can play as an eight in this system. I think he can play as an eight in Liverpool's previous system, the 4-3-3. If he was to play on the left side of the three in Liverpool's previous system, fine. In this system, doing what Jones is doing, for example, I can't see Manu Kone doing that. So, for me, I agree with you in the sense that there is only one place in this system that we're using currently that he could play, and that is where Fabinho is, which would then mean Fabinho comes out the team. You also have Bacetic wanting to get minutes. You potentially have Henderson wanting to get minutes if we sign a few of these number eights. You have Thiago wanting to get minutes. These are all kind of wanting that role, really. And on top of that, you play him next to Trent with the ball, but don't forget, defensively, when our press is initially beaten, we then retreat into a 4-3-3, which would mean Kone would be a lone six, something that he's not accustomed to doing, and something that he is a... For me, he's a bit of a ball chaser, in the sense that... Not in a bad way, but just as in... He wants to go and get the ball, like a Ugarte, like a Kante. Not so much to that level, but when I think of a lone six, I think of a holding presence, a Busquets, a Fabinho, a Rodri, someone who stays and reads, not someone who hunts, if you know what I mean.
Analyzing Anfield on the Blood Red Channel.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Well, I think, again, I think this is something partly due to the fact of what his role was in the Gladbach side. So, because he hasn't played a lot of Lone Six, doesn't necessarily mean to think that he can't do it. I do think you're right in terms of he wants to get about and cover the ball and be proactive. But I do also think that the Liverpool Six is going to need to do that. I mean, to be honest, that when Fabinho was at his best, that's what he was doing. And when he's been at his worst this last season, it's one of the more noticeable things that he hasn't been doing, which is stepping forward and being proactive. I am putting a lot of faith in the fact that he will be able to learn the discipline to play that role, granted. But I do think that it's something that we're going to need to look at because, again, looking at some of the struggles we had last season, part of the problem was that Fabinho was passing wasn't as crisp and it was kind of slowing things down. And it was the same when you had him and Henderson in the team. It was the same problem coming from both. So I think having someone who's going to be, as you say, press resistant, but also be able to recycle possession quite quickly and quite perpetually, I think it's going to give him something else in that position. Like I say, I realise that I'm doing a lot of kind of, okay, hopefully he will be able to do X, Y, and Z, but I can see the plan. And like I say, I've watched this kid a lot, and I do think that he's the kind of talent that could blossom in this level.
Yeah, I don't want to necessarily come across as a negative. I don't want to necessarily play him down like that, because as I said, I do think he's a good player. And I think if Liverpool were linked with this lad 3 months ago, or whatever it was, 4 months ago, I'd have been like, yeah, fine. That's along the lines of the profile I was kind of thinking, to be honest. It's just since we've made this change, I'm just a little bit like, right, what's the plan here? And the reason I'm so bothered about this, by the way, is last summer, Liverpool signed Darwin Nunes and Fabio Carvalho, right? Two good players who just had good seasons and have lots of potential still attached to their games, right? But Nunes comes in, doesn't fit the system. And all season he's been used as a square peg in a round hole for me. He's been used on the flanks and he's been used like he's Bobby Firmino when he's not. And Fabio Carvalho arrives as a number 10 for Fulham. And Klopp plays him as a 8 and as a wide forward. And on the back of those kind of changes in environment for them, neither of them have prospered so far at Anfield. I'm not saying they're never going to or whatever, but no. Carvalho is now available on loan. And so far with Nunes, we have praised the positive elements of his game, and I do think he's capable of exploding in England. But I just mean purely in a tactical sense, he's provided a bit of a puzzle for Klopp. And this is why any player Liverpool are getting linked with this summer, any midfielder or whatever, rather than just looking at this player's good, I'm really thinking, like, where's the fit now? Where is he going to play?
But the thing about that, and the really crucial part of analysing that fit, is knowing how much we're going to be playing this box midfield and how much we're not. Because I really don't think we're going to be playing it every game. I think it doesn't suit us to play every game. So I think we're going to need to be able to say, okay, he can do a job in this one. Can he do a job in the other one? And there might be times where our answer is no and Klopp's answer is yeah. I mean, this wouldn't be the first time it's been that way in anything. The other thing you mentioned I wanted to pick up on earlier on, you're talking about how competition for places, and if we are going to be playing this box, the position next to Trent, there's going to be maybe 3 or 4 guys who all want to fill that. Well, this goes back to the thing that always happens at this time of summer, is that we look at our options and say, wow, we've got loads of players who can play there, loads of players who can play there. It's going to be loads of players sitting around on the bench or not happy about playing. And then we get to the season and what happens? Like, we have to finally, a plan as if they're going to be out, not as if they're going to be in. And I say this with no kind of joy about it. Yes, obviously, Oxlade-Chamberlain and Keita aren't going to be at the club anymore. So you'd like to think that that would mean you could be a bit more optimistic in terms of the reliability. But Thiago, I think Henderson as well. If you were being unkind, you would add Jones in as well. But I think the nature and the randomness of his injuries, I think, kind of takes him out of the kind of proneness. But with Jones, we don't know whether or not he's finally sold this shin splints thing that he's been having to manage all season. So there are all of these things you have to bring into when you say, I want to be able to have this many players. And also, we are still going to be in Europe. So we are still going to be playing a decent amount of games at our best. We're hopefully going to be breaking 50 games for the whole season across the four competitions. So there's going to be lots of opportunities for people to play. And if we are going to be introducing this many new players at a time, which we are, the one thing you need to be able to do is, if they're not working, take them out. Because that was part of the problem with some of the other players, when it's not really working for them, but there's no one else who can really do that role. So on you go, lad. And again, yeah, you're dead on with the Nunes. I think Carvalho, to be honest, I think a lot of us were saying, where does he fit before he signed?
Yeah.
So with Nunes, it was almost like, okay, well, if we're going to do things differently, then he's the guy. And as it turns out, doing things differently for many reasons didn't quite work. So yeah, I do agree with you that we need to assess players in terms of what they're going to do rather than just what they have done previously. But I do think that we also need a little bit more information from Jurgen before we can be certain one way or another.
Yeah, I think we can say it mainly with the congested number six role is probably mostly Bicetic. I just don't want to block that path. That would be my concern with it, because Kone is 22. So if Liverpool do sign him, he's going to be around for a fair bit. And that looked initially like the plan was keep going with Fabinho, who's 29, I think, still.
Yeah.
And then when he kind of phases out, you bring through Bicetic, who maybe will be 19, 20, or something like that. And he's looking ahead of his years and stuff. So if Liverpool went and signed Kone, I'd be curious to see what we were doing. But as you say, if we use the 4-3-3 sometimes, because obviously Trent can't play as an inverted fullback every 3 days for a full season. No. So we will probably use that system sometimes. In that system, for me, Kone can probably play as a left-sided eight or possibly at a push as the lone six. But I'm still undecided as to whether I can see him as a lone six or not. He can also play as a double six, which he's done all season for Gladbach. McAllister can do that too.
Yeah. And I reckon, so yeah, but you could have one of those two alongside Bicetic as a double six. And I think that works quite well in a lot of games. I do think as well, the nature of being Europa League compared to Champions League, we might see a little bit more experimentation than maybe previously with some of the group games in particular. So I think it's exciting. I think my personal feeling always is, as good as we were at having one system and one team, and that worked really, really well for a long time, I do think genuinely when you are trying to build a team, the more ways you can win, the more ways you can set up, the better, because it just makes you harder to game plans against. And I think one thing we're going to have to do over the course of this preseason, we're going to have to come up with a plan for when opposition put two men on Trent Alexander-Arnold. Because I'm telling you right here, right now, that it's definitely going to happen next season. There's going to be teams who are just like, just put two men on him. Doesn't matter. Just put two men on him. And we're going to need a plan for when that happens. And I like the idea of McAllister and potentially even another player who can progress the ball through dribbling that he can pass it to, or even just do a little wall pass so he can get away. But that, like if we aren't doing that, then we're going to get in a lot of trouble next summer.
Yeah. No, I am generally in favour of having, you know, versatile players who possess different skills and things like that. I have no issues with that. I think probably a lot of it stems from the Nunes thing. It has scarred me a tiny bit. And I will say as well, I think I'm right in saying I've been a fairly consistent supporter of Nunes, and I still am. It's just, I can see that kind of tactical dilemma he's caused this season a little bit with Klopp. And some of it just suggests to me that Liverpool have been a tiny bit surprised by something about his game. I think maybe he thought he'd be a bit more comfortable than he has been on flanks and stuff. And maybe he thought he was a bit more technical when it comes to like linking the play like Bobby's done. But he's painted himself for me as a proper Haaland who just puts the ball in the net for you and instigates chaos and doesn't really do much else. Runs the channels a lot and stuff. But I don't know. I think because of that, and obviously that's the first window. That was the first window in which Edwards was not at the club, which could just be a coincidence, but you know, you never know. So I do think this sort of thing matters. But if you look at Kone's numbers this season, just one of the areas in which he shines is his dribbling. Obviously, there's only one midfielder in the Bundesliga who completed more dribbles than him this season, and that was Jude Bellingham, who is going to Real Madrid. But he shows up well in terms of his ball winning as well, his recoveries, his tackles, his interceptions. So he is that kind of press-resistant player who can get out of tricky situations, dribble his way out of trouble, carry the ball over distances while also putting a foot in quite a bit. But for me, he is a player for the defensive third and the middle third, not the final third. I don't think he is inclined to get involved with that. He's not going to register goals or assists for you. So, in my opinion, you have to use him like that.
If he finds himself in a position on the end of the box, he can shoot. Like, he scored a really good goal against Dortmund. But I don't think he, for Gladbach, that was part of his game to really do that. It was almost that at the end of his dribbles, he was always looking to pass or looking to try and draw defenders in particularly and then give it someone else. But yeah, I don't think it's something that we will be looking for him for particularly. But I do think goals are going to be something that we're going to need from the midfield in general, if not necessarily from him.
Analyzing Anfield on the Blood Red Channel.
Yeah. So next up, we have Kevin Schürrle, who is very similar in terms of the, I suppose, the package in a way, in terms of like him and Conley are both 22. Both players have contracts expiring in 2 years. Both players are on a relatively low wage. Both players have good availability. Both players play for clubs who are probably lower in the food chain when it comes to like Nice and Gladbach. Mm-hmm. And Kone is about 6 foot and Thuram is about 6'3", which is probably the first thing you notice about him when you watch him play for the first time. He is enormous. But what do you think of him, Mo?
I like him. I like this kid. I think he was someone who I didn't initially see just from playing in the watching Ligue 1, but then Dan Austin flagged him up to me just around Christmas time. And I've been watching him ever since. And yeah, I think, again, he's another one. You look at him playing and you think about a year with Klopp and what that could do to him in terms of raising all of his levels. But again, like you say, someone who's very comfortable on the ball, someone very comfortable carrying the ball, someone who can be very threatening in and around the edge of the penalty area. So again, if you were thinking about the box, he would be at the top of the box and he would be causing damage. I think if you look at his numbers for through balls in particular, he was the highest in his team and one of the highest in Ligue 1 this season. So he's able to get to that edge and be a penetrative force, which I like. Again, he's young. Again, he's raw. But again, I think if you look at the qualities he can bring to the team, he can definitely improve us.
Yeah, he looks like an interesting player. Similar to Kone in the sense that, like, I don't think he's a bad player by any means. I don't really have too many issues about his game. I think he is obviously a very physical presence. Another player who likes to dribble from the middle of the park. Another player who likes to carry the ball over large distances. He's got really long strides. And I was trying to think of a player who he depicts shades of when he's doing that. And the only player I could think of who's like a really tall physical specimen, but can also carry the ball with really close control was Yaya Toure. I couldn't really think of anybody else off the top of my head who does that.
I mean, this is, people are going to think I'm taking a piss when I say this, but I genuinely have been a fan of this kid. And I think I mentioned him in that wildcard show you mentioned before. Philip Billing on the ball.
Yeah.
And like I say, he has that height, but he also has aliveness to him and to his movement. So the things that you aren't expecting to see from someone at his frame, he's able to do. And again, that works. He works that brilliantly to his advantage. People make assumptions about the kind of player he is, and he's able to just spin away from them. But I'm really intrigued by so many parts of this Kevin Durant deal, because rumors, obviously we don't normally deal with rumors here, but one of the rumors has suggested that Nice are interested in taking Fabio Carvalho on loan. So in terms of who would suit playing our new systems more, him or Carvalho, I think it's him by a distance. So not only would him coming in potentially add to ours, but it would also, as I say, solve the kind of issue around Carvalho that it looks like we've got in terms of where is his position, where does he fit. So yeah, I'm waiting to see what happens in terms of this deal. I do think that of the guys who we, of the three we mentioned, he's the most likely to have other teams try to get him, make serious bids for him. So it might be the more difficult of the three to sign from where I'm sitting at the moment. But yeah, the fact that we're interested, the fact that we aren't just trying to buy one physically imposing player is another good sign for me, because, I mean, let's face it, what happens if you get injured? You get back to square one.
You're scarred by these injuries more.
I mean, time. We have to keep thinking about these things, Josh. Like, they will continue to happen.
I know. But yeah, I mean, if you look at Shuram in terms of the kind of player that he is, the profile that you see, I'd say he's a bit more of an all-rounder than Kone is in terms of all phases of the game and all thirds of the game, all thirds of the pitch. I'd say he leans a bit less towards the defensive side of the game. I think he's a bit more at home in the final third of the pitch. Probably a bit more attack-minded and technical, maybe in terms of like close control and that sort of thing. Again, if I'm totally honest, I think he is more of a fit in the original 4-3-3 than the box. I think if it was in the box, I probably agree with you, Mo, in the sense that I can see him possibly as this number 8/10 role. But even that does feel, it doesn't feel like a perfect fit. It doesn't feel like a McAllister or a Mount or even a Jones. It feels like he's not a perfect fit there, but enough of a fit for that to work. But it comes back to that kind of interesting thing, really, where similar to Kone, he's got loads of potential. He's probably got a higher ceiling than Kone potentially, and lots of qualities attached to his game, stuff like that. But my thing again is just like, what's the plan for him? Where's the fit and stuff? And I think for me, he suits the left side of the pitch again, which is interesting. You can't get anyone for the right lately. But yeah, your only thoughts on that? What are your thoughts on his fit?
Well, the fact that he favours the left side is probably the only thing that may potentially be an issue. But then if you look at the key passes and assists and the through balls I mentioned previously, a lot of them are actually occurring in the central positions. So he's able to kind of start from the left, but then he's able to drift inside, find the space, and then produce a killer pass from straight ahead. So I think the interesting thing, he's actually better in the air than Kone. That's one thing about Manu Kone that I find quite strange, is that his aerial duels is quite low for someone who of his size and stature. But with Thuram, it looks a little bit more like you expect of a guy like him. I mean, I do think genuinely that, again, if you put him at the top of the box, then it could definitely work. One thing I do think about this as well, we're talking about a lot of options for one side. Like I said in the last show, and I'm just going to be saying it until I see evidence otherwise, I think we'll start to see Diogo Jota with him being one of those positions. And he's someone who could operate on the right-hand side of it. So I think he's going to come into play as an option in that world, as well as being an option for one of the front three positions. So in terms of how the squad makeup looks, I do think we'll have plenty of options in that right box if it turns out to be that way, even if some of them may be naturally more suited to the left-hand side. With Thuram, I think he's another player who, like you say, his ceiling appears to be quite high. And he's at the stage now where if we were to buy him for the reported fee of around £50 million, maybe take a 6 or 7 off that if they like the deal with the Carvalho, at 22, and maybe say 3 seasons into a 5-year deal, it's not really working out for him. We're going to be able to recoup at least 50% of that. So I think when you're looking at it in terms of potential risk, I think that we're able to be covered. I think that these are things that the club are thinking about, particularly in the face of what you said about Nunes. That was a big swing. And I don't think this summer is going to be one for big swings, which is part of the reason why I think that we shied away from Mason Mount. That would have ended up being a bigger swing than we wanted it to be, simply because of his wages, I think, personally.
Well, this kind of brings me on to, I suppose, my next kind of question, and that is both. You know, if Liverpool was to sign both, how would you feel? Because, again, if you check Twitter, that's what everyone wants, I suppose. Everyone wants Liverpool to get both in. They're both good players. I think they could play together. I don't have too many concerns about that. I suppose my concern with it would be, I think just considering Liverpool's season, what happened to us and where we are now and things like that, I'd be a tiny bit underwhelmed in terms of like the status of these players that we're getting in to fix our overwhelming problem. The fact that we've just saved money on McAllister.
Yeah.
There was initial talk about Bellingham, you know, a wonder kid. There was talk about Mount, who for me is brilliant. And even Gravenberg. If we end up getting in Kone and Thuram, I'd be like, okay, you know, I can see things, you know, the good players and things like that. But I think getting both in would just be, they'd need a bit of time for the start.
Yeah, but again, I feel like getting both in helps both, because they would need time to bed in, and they will almost give each other that time. I think in terms of the status of players, like
I think what I'm getting at is how far down the list do you think those two are?
Oh, well, see, this is a very interesting thing, because it's something I was going to say at the very beginning. Like, what do we think Liverpool's plan A was Bellingham and Mount? Because I'm not 100% sure it was.
Go on.
I think it's hard to envisage doing those two and another third midfielder in terms of what you're expecting to outlay, not just in terms of the transfer fee, the wages. Because this, and the wages is the thing that I was always in the back of my mind thinking about Mason Mount. I was like, we aren't going to pay him what he wants. Like, if you look at the numbers quoted, and yes, there was maybe some kind of inflation in some areas of some of the numbers, but the point is that he was disrespected in his eyes at Chelsea. He wasn't in the top 15 earners. And the way Chelsea had done it was crazy when you think about how many other players came in on higher wages, considering how much he was playing in that time. So he's in the situation now where it's like, I've been disrespected. I need someone who's going to actually, you know, give me wages that I think justifies the stature of the player I am. I really don't think that Liverpool were going to be able to do that. And again, with Bellingham, you look at the reported wages he's getting at Madrid. I think it what shakes out to something like it would have been 450,000 a week. if you adjust it for tax, Liverpool weren't paying that. Like, even from Jude Bellingham, Liverpool weren't paying that. Like, yeah. So I think there's an amount of that we wanted someone from the very top tree. We wanted to be able to reassert our status as the very best team and one of the biggest teams in the world. But that's just not what we've ever done. Like, even our biggest two signings, the ones that we always point to say that we do big deals, Alisson and Van Dijk, right? Van Dijk was very much the highly sought-after player, very much one of the best players in this position. But he was still playing for Southampton. And so we would still have been able to give him a much better wage quite easily.
Yeah.
The guys who are 35 to 40 million and turn into guys who are worth 80 to 90 million. That's Liverpool. That's what we've done on the club, and that's what's been successful. So I think that the Turam Kone deals, as much as it feels like we've been sold a ringer after all that time chasing Bellingham, this is really Liverpool. This is kind of what we do. So I'm not disappointed by that as long as it works.
The only thing I'd say about that is I think McAllister is more Liverpool for me, in the sense that he's just turned 24. He's still at Brighton, okay, but he's just won a World Cup and he's established himself as a player who's really making like the leap type thing. If you think of Fabinho, when Fabinho arrived, I think he was much further along the way than Thuram or Kone. And I think same with Naby. Same with Cody Gakpo. You know, I think Liverpool definitely pick up players from like clubs lower in the food chain and things like that. I've got no real issues with that. I'm just thinking, I don't know, looking at Thuram and Kone, I'm not sure they are as far along the way, basically evolution wise, as the typical player Liverpool would acquire.
Analyzing Anfield on the Blood Red Channel.
No, and that's fair. And I think also that might be a little bit of the sign of where we are in the market, particularly in the market for midfielders, because obviously you've got the blockbuster deals. We've mentioned Jude Bellingham, Declan Rice is going to be another one. Moises Caicedo, when he eventually moves, is going to be one. But because there are so many big teams who are looking for a midfielder, and so many midfielders, like the three I've mentioned, who are playing for small teams, who are going to see them as their grand asset and are going to be trying to get the absolute maximum. So when you have a kind of a baseline that starts all the way up here, to the players who are just on the cusp, who are just making the leap, rather than those players being 35, 40 million, those are now 65, 70 million players. And I think that I have a slight bit of sympathy in terms of why we aren't going for those guys now, because again, it's about quantity as much as quality with this window for us. So yeah, I totally get what you mean when you say that we would normally be a little bit more sure that they're going to be a sure thing than we go with those two. But I do think that this market is a bit of an odd one in terms of that. I do think, like I say, because Caicedo would probably be the only other one within that realm. And it's like, I have no idea how much whoever buys him is going to have to pay. But it's going to be at least two McAllisters, maybe three.
Yeah, it's interesting because Liverpool are in a tricky position at the minute. You know, Liverpool are in a position whereby if we can't get number one, two, three, four on the shortlist, usually Liverpool would walk away and say, right, we'll come again next summer then. But we literally learned this season that we have used up all our time, and no matter what, we need midfielders. And that is why we are now getting linked with players who seem to be not like the bottom of the list or anything like that, but just a bit further down the list than Liverpool would typically entertain in terms of like a Thuram or a Kone. I mean, for example, just like a quick question, put you on the spot to see if you can see kind of like where I'm coming from. If Liverpool get in McAllister, Kone, Thuram, and I don't know, maybe a defender or whatever. But I mean, if that's Liverpool's midfield fix, do Liverpool win the league next season, or contend for the league next season?
Contend, yes. They can.
So
win, probably not. For them to be able to all click in a way that gives us that level of consistency, no. But what I do think we'll be able to do with that midfield, we'll be able to be back into the top three at the very least. I would like to say the top two. And I do think we'd be a team good enough to beat Manchester City and in a one-off 90-minute game. And I think that is still going to be a bar that's too high for the majority of the Premier League teams. So I think it's into a contention with everyone.
Yeah, I mean, to contend, really, especially with this Manchester City team, you basically need 85 to 90 points as a minimum, really. So, you know, if Liverpool get Kone, Thuram, McAllister as the midfield fix this summer, would Liverpool get that many points? I suppose that's one for our listeners to now ask themselves now on the spot, I suppose. But one of the interesting things I wanted to throw in there, actually, that I saw the link with Pavard. I think that is very interesting, personally. The reason I think it's interesting is because if we get in Pavard, that would allow Trent to become a full-time midfielder rather than an inverted fullback. And the way we're currently talking about Liverpool's midfielders and getting linked with the likes of Thuram and Kone, who still kind of on the rough diamond side rather than the ready side, you would then just have Trent as a new kind of midfielder, could play as an 8 in the box, could play as a 6 in the box comfortably. And when you think of Trent as a player, I think Carragher said something similar recently in terms of like you could go and spend 100 million in the market. You're probably unlikely to sign a better midfielder than Trent. Whereas if you sign a right back like Pavard, who isn't amazing, but is an established elite right back who has won league titles and World Cups and stuff like that, still a reasonable age. I think he's like 27. So if Liverpool could get, I mean, what would you choose out of Incesmo, out of like Pavard or Thuram or Pavard or Kone?
Because
it's an interesting question that I think Liverpool are considering, because that would be a way of adding a new midfielder in Trent, but without signing a midfielder, you sign a right back, if you see what I mean.
Well, I mean, it depends upon whether you class Trent as a defensive midfielder or an attacking one, because
I think he can do both.
So again, it just gives you more options. I do think on that, I do think this season might be the deciding one, where it might be we get to the end of the season and it's worked wonderfully. And Klopp does decide, yes, you're going to be a midfielder now and we're going to buy a new right back or a new right-sided defender, whatever that looks like. Or it could be that it's still something that only works at certain times and we only bring out certain times, so then he will still normally remain a right back. I think this year is going to be what decides that one way or the other, because at the end of this year is when we expect to see Thiago and Henderson in particular, if not move on, then no longer be considered part of the regular first team rotation, I think. So this season is going to be how we decide what he does, and it's going to be fascinating, man. It really is going to be fascinating, because like you say, there are so many variables in terms of we don't know what it is we're trying to do. We don't know who is first choice, who is second choice, and all those things. The thing that I like the most is that it looks like our intention is to be as proactive as possible so we can get these players in the building as quickly as possible, and then so we really know what we've got and we can really work from there.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be an interesting summer to cover Liverpool. We actually have things to talk about this summer rather than Liverpool just buying one player and then saying that's it, we're done.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to be an ongoing theme. I think next week we'll probably get linked with new midfielders and we'll have to talk about them. But it keeps things interesting, keeps things fresh. Obviously, we've got McAllister in the door now, but it remains to be seen who's going to be next. But we'll keep our ear to the ground. Mo, before we end, mate, I am going to touch on Analysing Anfield FPL League, which has been officially concluded. So I'm going to name the top 10. Congratulations. In fact, no, I'm going to name the top 11 and you'll find out why in a second.
All right.
So at the top, congratulations to Odin Cyrus, who finishes top of the league by 12 points. We've got Nasser Al-Thani in second, Bendik Falsch-Koshlung in third. Christ. Arnajam Gil Skarsson in fourth. Apologies if I butchered that one. Ian Quinn in fifth. It's a nice name. Mike Wally in sixth. Dennis Ernst in seventh. Elvin LJ in eighth. Joe Tang in ninth. Richard Pierce in 10th, and in 11th is Josh Williams.
Yeah, I had a feeling that that might be the case. I mean, you had to put yourself through the pain of all those pronunciations just to say it. So
yeah,
I feel like, I mean, if we're doing a, you know, a first 11, like you know, a lot of the time, like a team of the year, then you're just about sneak in. But yeah.
Right. Yeah, I'll go in goal, mate. I'll go in goal. but yeah, there were 775 participants in the league. So if you finished in the top 10, congratulations. Well done for that. And in terms of the Analyzing Anfield Cup, the winner of that was me. So I'll take that, mate. I've won Sutton in my home ground.
Yeah, and I mean, it's amazing how you found the time to bring this part in, isn't it? Now I know that you won something.
Yeah, this can be like a little clip that we save. I think I'm going to post this myself.
Well, I'm very aware of the fact that I can't say too much because I'm kind of getting back into it after 2 years away next season. So it's going to be, I'm going to need to kind of back up any big chat I give right now. So
yeah. Well, I was going to say, mate, next year you have no choice but to enter. You're getting involved. But until then, we will put that one on pause. I'll send out the code and all that stuff at the start of next season so that people can join and stuff. Obviously, we'll hopefully get like closer to 1,000 entrants next season. Yeah. But yeah, Mo, after a week off, mate, it's nice to be joined by it again.
Yeah, I always enjoy these little chats, and like I say, we've had some real fun with this one. We don't know how right or wrong we're going to be, but it's going to be exciting either way.
I feel like it was a bit of a good cop, bad cop episode. That I feel like I was the kind. You made me look like the negative guy, didn't you? And you was coming across as super positive.
Well, I mean, that's just my demeanor in general. And
yeah, it's a good way to be.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the thing about it as well is that we both come at it with reason and with arguments that are actually reasonable. And I think that's kind of what most of the people know us for. So even if we're not on the same side of an argument, we can still have a debate without it turning into anything bad.
Yeah. It's reasoned debates. I don't like blind faith when we're just saying everything's going to be great, because this season has been proved that it's not the case.
No.
But yeah, thanks for joining us, mate. And no, our listeners, we will be back next week. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to the Analyzing Anfield podcast on the Blood Red Channel.